We are here in the matter of Progressive Golf Insurance versus Karen Hike. This is case number 57324. Mr. Prince, Mr. Carter, are you ready to proceed?
Carter?
Yes, sir.
Very well. You may proceed.
Pleases the court. One of the critical functions of any choice of law analysis is to promote harmony among the interstate for promotion of interstate commerce. In not enforcing or failing to enforce this choice of law provision would promote disharmony. I think it's relatively clear that we live in a very mobile society. And failure to enforce, and particularly our state, where we rely so heavily on tourism, and many residents from other states come through our state with policies of insurance that contain the identical type of family exclusion you're here called to address. Mm-hmm. And failure to enforce this choice of law provision would effectively rewrite every insurance policy that comes to us from another state that has, while validly issued state, it's going to reach a contrary result or a disparate result in this particular state. This is particularly compelling in this case because it's unclear when Ms. Fainrich, she moved to Nevada, but let's assume, according to the brief, it was in February of 2008. According to NRS 43.245, she wanted to be established as a resident in our state and comply with our laws and therefore receive the benefit of our laws. She was required to obtain a Nevada driver's license within 30 days. More to the point, as it relates to Progressive, according to the policy terms and conditions, she was required to report an address change to Progressive with when she moved. She never reported any address change. And in fact, at the time of this accident, that vehicle wasn't even on the Progressive policy. The only reason why we're here is because she, after her divorce from Mr. Fainrich, failed to tell Progressive that they were no longer married and no longer residing in the same household. She didn't do that either. So not only did she not comply with the terms of the Progressive policy, she didn't comply with Nevada law in terms of the licensure requirements. Now, I don't believe the mere fact that a disparate outcome indicates that there's an implication of a violation of our state public policy. While it is very clear that the public policy of this state is to require that all policy issued, that they cannot have a validly enforceable family exclusion, just because we would have a different outcome in this case versus in Missouri, or Mississippi rather, does not mean that we should not enforce this particular contractual provision. Now, with regard to our case law, I believe Sotorakis controls. That is the leading case on the enforcement of a choice of law provision dealing with a family exclusion. And in that case, this court did not indicate that a source of recovery was at any part of the factor or analysis in enforcing the choice of law provision. In that particular case, was California. And in fact, there's no indication in that case that Ms. Sotorakis was going to receive compensation from any other source other than USAA in that particular case. And in that analysis,
the difference between Sotorakis in this case is the woman driver in this case was a resident of Nevada, correct? Whereas both the plaintiffs in Sotorakis were residents of California.
That's incorrect. I don't think there's no affidavit, no evidence that she is a resident of the state of Nevada. While she had moved to the state of Nevada at some point prior to the accident, there's no evidence or indicia that she was a resident of our state. She, at the time of the accident, she maintained the Mississippi driver's license. While she had a Las Vegas-based address, she was driving a car that was registered still in the state of Mississippi. So there's no indicia or clear evidence that she was a resident in our state. There's no affidavit in any part of the record indicating that she was, when she moved to the state of Nevada, clearly, whether she was working here, gainfully employed. But even assuming that, I don't think that's even outcome determinative because, as this court noted in Sotorakis, the intent of the parties has to play a critical role. Clearly, when Progressive underwrote this policy, it did so with the intention that it was issuing a policy to residents of the state of Mississippi, insuring a risk in the state of Mississippi, collecting a premium based upon a risk located in Mississippi. And here's the anomaly of this case and how people could, if they don't comply with not only our law, but the insuring requirements, I'm sure the premium would be dramatically different in an urban environment like this rather than a rural Mississippi. Failure to timely report a change of address to Progressive would allow an insured person to simply receive the benefits of coverage from another state, paying less of a premium, all to the detriment of Progressive. Certainly, she had no other available insurance. She didn't take the necessary steps to buy insurance that complied with Nevada law, as she was required to do. While she had insurance as a driver, she did not maintain insurance on the vehicle as required by Nevada law, didn't obtain a Nevada driver's license timely, and therefore she should not be receiving the benefits of the Nevada public policy as if a policy was issued in this state.
Well, but the claimants here are the children, correct?
Correct.
So do you concede that they were Nevada residents at the time? You do not.
The reason why, I think they had dual residency, because according to the, accepting this as true for the purposes of my argument, according to Ms. the Famerich, they moved out here the day before this accident. They had been living with the father until school got out. So obviously they had some custodial arrangement shared by between mother and father. And for up until the day before the accident, they had been continuously living in the state of Mississippi. And I believe for this case that we've cited, it's the Allstate case from Florida, that children from divorced parents are considered residents for the purposes of insurance purposes, for choice of law analysis in any event. Because you can't be considered like when we're going to be a resident only when we're with dad, but not a resident when we're with dad when we're living outside of the state, but you have the same insurance policy.
What do we do with the Ninth Circuit's phrasing of the question certified to this court, which refers to the children as Nevada residents?
I think you're going to have to rephrase the question and answer it without that statement, because I went back, and if you looked at, I think that was an error by the court, with all due respect to the Ninth Circuit, because they did indicate that the parties were essentially, the facts were essentially stipulated to, and that's not accurate. If you look at the stipulation, which for the entry of final judgment, that wasn't one of the stipulated facts, because one of the positions maintained by Progressive throughout is that they weren't residents of the state of Nevada, they are residents of Mississippi, or they had dual residency status, which wouldn't affect the analysis in any event. So if you assume a dual residency status, then the provision is applicable and enforceable under Mississippi law. And there's no indication that as of June 8, 2003, that all of a sudden Ms. Toni Fainrich had exclusive custody and control. And in fact, I think the evidence is, or the facts are opposite based upon the statements made by the Fainriches and their pleadings in both before this court and before the Ninth Circuit. I think what was confusing to the Ninth Circuit was this court statement in Williams that it's only where there's been a denial of all recovery that you've applied Nevada law versus the other state's law. But that was in reliance upon the Daniels case. Well, the Daniels case was an insurance case, a life insurance case, and the policy was actually purchased by a Nevada resident. The policy was mailed to a Nevada resident. The insurance company collected premiums from a Nevada resident, and this court refused to enforce a Missouri choice of law provision because they had a failure to notify of a termination of the policy in the event of a non-payment, and which was not in accord with our state. But it wasn't a situation where you had a non-resident purchasing a policy outside the state of Nevada who happened to move here without complying with Nevada law requirements or even the policy of insurance. I mean, certainly Progressive, as the contracting party, has the right to believe that they're insuring a risk in a particular location and particular people living in a particular household, and that is one of the requirements. And if it's at record 8A009, is the policy requirement that she immediately notify the change of address. 1 month before this, Mr. Fainrich took the 2001 Jeep off the policy. However, Ms. Fainrich remained on the policy because they needed something in writing from Mr. Fainrich, Progressive did, or alternatively something from Ms. Fainrich advising of her change of address. And had that happened, had she timely done that, Progressive would have taken her off of the Mississippi policy and issued her a Nevada policy, and we wouldn't even be having this discussion. She did not do that. If you're going to claim the benefits of the residency status in the state of Nevada, then you should, number one, comply with our law requirements, but also comply with the contractual terms of the policy. Clearly, Ms. Fainrich had to have at least the implicit expectation that if she's involved in an accident with her children in the state of Mississippi, that there's not going to be any coverage. And she always had a Mississippi-based policy. Her expectation of coverage certainly did not change when she relocated to Nevada without notifying Progressive of her change of address. That all of a sudden there's going to be new laws applied in this state that may be contrary to the laws of the state of Mississippi. And therefore, she can avoid having to comply with the terms, but at the same time receive benefits that she wouldn't otherwise be entitled to. One of the other questions that this court has was, was she required to obtain a driver's license? And it's our position that she, in fact, was required to have a driver's license, and she was required to register the vehicle within 30 days of her residency status. She did not do that either. Clearly, that type of evidence would be an indicator that she's a true resident of the state of Nevada with the intent to stay here. We don't know, and it's unclear because there was no discovery of what her occupation was and whether she was even working at the time. That's critical to the residency status of Chapter 483 relating to driver's license requirements.
Mr. Prince, I don't mean to interrupt, but if you intend to reserve any time for rebuttal, I wanted you to be mindful of the time that you presently have remaining, which is 4.12.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal, so I will wrap up my comments.
I have one question. Your opponent makes an argument about the out-of-state coverage clause in the policy. Could you comment on that?
I can, and that's not applicable here because implicit within that coverage is if the policy applies. We're saying that there's an exclusion here that precludes the applicability of the policy, so therefore you don't need to even reach the out-of-state coverage provision, because if the policy is not applicable, you don't even reach that. This is the situation where that may come into play, is if, for example, I know in the state of Mississippi, Louisiana, their minimum requirements would be $10,000, and if they came to Nevada, they'd say, we'll conform to your minimum requirements, assuming the policy applies. And you don't have to reach that analysis here because the policy does not have any application. We believe that the parties contracted for insurance coverage in the state of Mississippi, paid for Mississippi-based insurance coverage. They had the expectation that the policy would be issued in accordance with Mississippi law and enforced in accordance with Mississippi law. That should not, just the mere fact that someone relocates here, we don't know how long she was going to be here, if it was temporary, if it was going to be permanent, or otherwise. And on this record, in this particular case, we believe that this, in order to promote harmony among the states, interstate commerce, particularly in underwriting insurance, this could create an absolute underwriting nightmare for insurance companies. If every state the person goes to, they're going to have potentially have their policy rewritten. We're urging you to answer the question in this way, that the choice of law provision is applicable in this particular case, and Mississippi law applies.
Thank you, Mr. Prince. Mr. Carter.
If it pleases the court, this court has consistently held that NRS 485.3091 would be used to exclude provisions under insurance policies that would try to limit or otherwise prevent insureds or victims of motor vehicle accidents from receiving the state minimum, which is $15,000 per person, $30,000 per accident. In this particular case, that's what would occur. Under Mississippi law, the Feinriches, Kristen and Randy Feinrich, would receive nothing. And therefore, this particular application of insurance would be contrary to Nevada public policy. Progressive contemplated other states' insurance being involved. Obviously, these vehicles are transported from one state to the next. People move, people vacation. And Nevada has realized that its burden on requiring insurance companies to pay the minimum are, in fact, just that, a minimum. It's $15,000 again per person. We must ask what state's law to apply, and we have specific direction under the Sidorakis and Severs case. And in this particular situation, I think before we look at that, we should understand the facts present. And I do not think that the Ninth Circuit got it wrong. Residents, if you look at the residential status of the individuals involved in this incident, we have the mother who moved out here and who stayed out here, that being Tony Feinrich. We have the children who moved out here and who stayed out here. Following the accident, they stayed here, they were treated here, they received medical treatment, and bills were incurred over and above $50,000. So the intent was to move here, and then that intent was realized.
Is that part of the record?
Stayed here. It's part of both moving brief. There was not any type of, this is the first I heard that this was not a stipulated fact. When there was discussion from the Ninth Circuit, I think they reached that it was, in fact, a stipulated fact. Has there been any kind of a formal stipulation amongst the parties? No, Your Honor, they have not. This motion filed by Progressive was filed before the beginning of any kind of discovery. Progressive filed a motion for declaratory, or a complaint for declaratory relief, and in fact, then there was an immediate motion for summary judgment. And so it never got to the evidentiary stage.
How do you distinguish Sotirakis?
Sure.
What facts differentiate that case from this one?
Absolutely. In Sotirakis, Your Honor, California residents had traveled out to Nevada. And the only contact was, in fact, the accident. And then the individuals moved back, or not moved back, but obviously after the accident traveled back to the state of California, treated in California. So if we look at Sotirakis and Severs, and we look at the five factors in determining what state's law...
No, but factually, you're saying the fact that distinguishes Sotirakis from this case is the plaintiffs in Sotirakis, or the insureds, were California residents, whereas the distinguishing feature here is that they were Nevada residents. Is there any other factual distinction between those two cases?
I'm not aware of, Your Honor. I guess, in addition, you look at the public policy of the forum. The medical treatment was done here. The medical bills were occasioned here. So if you look at the state's interest, it goes beyond just compensating the victims of an accident by the minimum, but also the payment of medical bills that were incurred in this state, which obviously would affect citizens, doctors, hospitals, other medical care providers.
But, counsel, if you make that argument, don't you then imply that there should have been a following of Nevada law in terms of having the policy changed to reflect that the party was now here, transferring, if in fact, driver's license here, things of that nature, which we kind of dissuade because the record is not developed. It's before us. We only have fleeting information in terms of we have her here. She's still under a Mississippi insurance policy. The kids were out here, I guess, one day prior to the accident.
Well, I guess
I have no idea if it was just a visitation or whatever based on the record that's before me.
Do you have the divorce decree?
Do we have a divorce decree as part of the record? I do not believe so. No. I guess if we look at the intent of the parties and then go to what Tony Feinrich, the mother, did, you're right, that's not before the court, Your Honor.
And it's very difficult because you start making a policy in terms of the policy of Nevada overriding the policy of Mississippi, public policy, and with this agreement. We started this relationship in Mississippi, and it just happenstance the incident occurred here. So why should Nevada care?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if we look at this, I'm not aware of one case that deals with Nevada residents, if that's what we want to make the distinguishing between the cases, that the court has determined that it was proper to completely exclude coverage under this situation, where there's, in fact, a family member exclusion, permissive driver exclusion. All the cases that I cite, Your Honor, in the, respondents cite, when we deal with, as an example, Grinillo, it was a impermissible driver exclusion, void to the extent it prevented any recovery pursuant to the responsibility statute. Has a similar fact pattern, member of a household specifically excluded, but the court voided that exclusion. That was a 1992 case. We have Baker versus Criterion, household exclusion. That was also voided to the extent that...
But that cut that you're making, doesn't it really a very finite cut based upon some type of linkage with the state in question, not just merely a pure contract relationship?
If you're done with the residency issue, Your Honor? Well, what's interesting I found was that if you look at the Williams case, which dealt with a California resident, and that's the most recent case that was that the court expressed views on. In that case, a California resident, we have a military, I think it was Air Force, who traveled out here for a four-week assignment. During that period of time, he'd been injured in an accident. The court determined that since that was his only contact, having been out here for an accident, I take that back. The court did not reach a determination, but because that was his only contact, they would not exclude that provision. They instead said, listen, we don't see in that particular case that there is a strong, compelling Nevada state interest. However, you look at the Daniels case, and then they went to the next step. All right, but would this preclude any recovery whatsoever?
But in Daniels, the policy was actually delivered in Nevada. It was contracted for in Nevada, correct? So Nevada had more of an interest in applying its law to that transaction.
Well, yeah, Daniels deals with a life insurance policy, and I agree it was a Nevada resident at that time. But what the Williams court said was, listen, but we need to look at whether or not this person is going to be precluded any recovery whatsoever. And that's directly in Williams. And it said that no, in that particular case, the person had received $300,000 of insurance, this California resident. And so the court went past simply looking at whether which state had the most substantial interest from Severs and from Sotirakis, but actually went, would there be complete and utter preclusion? And in that case, no. So in this case, I guess we have, in addition to this being a complete and utter preclusion of any kind of recovery for these two children, we go to the next step, is that, okay, does Nevada have a strong enough state interest? And if the court is unsure of the residential status because of the record, at least if we point out that we've got an individual who was injured, who moves here, there's no evidence to indicate that they moved away from Nevada. They came here with their mother. They were injured here, and they incurred medical treatment, medical bills here. And so, again, unfortunately, we didn't go through all the depositions of the doctors and all that. And there was no trial of this matter. This was a motion for summary judgment that the appellant lost. So, but I think it's important. The most recent case is the Williams case, and it does talk about going even beyond the potential relationship and going to utter complete.
Counsel, could I interrupt you? Did you finish your answer to?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Okay. I assume that you would agree that your client, Mrs. Fenrick, would have been required to register her vehicle if she's a Nevada resident.
I believe there's a resident. Yes, correct.
In 485-185 mandates that anybody who's required to register in the state has got to have an insurance policy that provides for these limits, right?
Correct.
Could you address this question then? You're asking the court to select Nevada law based upon our public policy that these minimums are required. If we accept your argument, are we disregarding what seems to be Nevada public policy that mandates people who become residents of the state to register their vehicles as required by the statute?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't think they're incongruent with one another. I think the intent of the one, 485.3091, is to make sure that any individual injured on the roadways through the act of negligence of another is provided with some kind of redress.
But wouldn't we be encouraging people who move to the state that have had insurances in other jurisdictions to simply rely on the insurance policy from their foreign jurisdiction and not follow the Nevada statutes that require them to make those changes?
It may be a leap to say that the individuals who have a contract of insurance would be motivated in the event that they injure somebody else, that those individuals may receive some kind of minimum insurance. I don't know how this information would be disseminated onto the public. I don't think the court would, in fact, make that kind of a public policy or a statement. I guess the key is if the court is inclined to believe that the citizens of this state are to be protected, and then the burden imposed is low, and whether or not these insurance companies contemplate this travel across the borders, and that ending up in another state, they could be required to have to pay the limits in their state, which I think are important to point out. Even their own clause in here, this out of other insurance, this out of state coverage. So in this particular case, Progressive has contemplated no matter what state their insured finds themselves in, if that state requires insurance over and above whatever insurance they had, whether it's $1 million of coverage, then Progressive will pay it. Okay. Now, in this case, it's a little bit different in the sense that it's not their insured causing damage to someone else and there's no exclusion. There is an exclusion. Okay, it's excluding these family members, these children. The point is, though, the contemplation that, yes, driving simply across the borders can make that insurance company responsible, and in a sense, they have no control where their driver goes to. And in this case, again, we're only asking for the minimum limits for these children. And so I guess the is the burden is are they are we overburdening the system by trying to protect our own citizens by these minimum limits?
Counsel, does the driver have a responsibility to notify the insurance company if, in fact, they change where they're driving on a regular basis?
I think we all can agree, yes, they do. The question is does that prevent the injured people because of that driver's
negligence? Well, the deal was struck when she was driving in Mississippi. And now the deal was struck when she was driving in the original home state. You say she intends to reside here. She's been here for, I guess, the parties are agreeing for more than 30 days or so on. And she never notified her insurance company.
I don't know when the notification was made. My understanding that from the time she moved here and established residency, at least made the attempt to do so, the kids came to live with her. I do not believe there was a contact with the insurance company.
That's correct.
Or an attempt to register. And again, we're not saying that she herself would be entitled to this type of coverage. Again, when you look at public policy, who are we trying to protect?
I look at this point to try to decide whether or not there's an intention to reside in Nevada or whether she was just here and didn't know what she was doing. Where she wanted to stay.
Sure.
So that goes to the public policy issue, trying to figure it out.
Okay.
And I don't think that you would dispute then that the policy as written or as calculated to be written by Progressive was based upon factors or actuarial figures that arose in the state of Mississippi, correct?
Correct. Correct. If I understand your question correct, I believe that, yes, the actuarial tables for this particular policy would be based primarily on the state of Mississippi, the individual's driving record, but also because, again, we don't have fences between borders. I believe that there is, in this out-of-state coverage provision, there is a contemplation and therefore a calculation of rates based upon being able to move and travel amongst the borders of the empire.
So if we follow your logic, where then would you have us draw the line with respect to, one, when an individual becomes a resident of the state of Nevada, subject and entitled to the protections that our public policy demands? And number two, should we draw a line? I mean, I'm getting the sense that your analysis is, well, they contemplate that there will be travel among and between several states, and therefore having to do with initiation of the contract, payments being made on the contract, home of at least the majority of residency in another state, doesn't matter.
Again, I agree with the public policy that we should try to mandate our citizens to try to contract once they move here with the insurance companies because of what you say, the actuarial tables, the inherent risk of that particular location. I agree with that. What I'm saying is I'm saying that I don't believe that one has to be at the exclusion of the other, that in the situations where an individual does drive out here, where they do have an accident, where others are injured, and under that policy there's an exclusion, that our public policy can override and try to allow some kind of recovery, consistent with our laws.
And Justice Pickering, you had a question, so please feel free to
actually
respond.
Actually, I'm fine. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Prince.
I think what has become clear is Ms. Fainters would like the benefits of Nevada law, but does not want to satisfy its her obligations under Nevada law. Specifically, like Justice Hardesty pointed out, not only did she not register the car, she did not insure the car. Her obligation was actually threefold when she gets here. One, obtain a Nevada driver's license. Two, register a vehicle. And three, insure the vehicle in accordance with Nevada law. If she registers the vehicle and demonstrates proof of financial responsibility as required, we're not even having this discussion. She would have a Nevada-based issued policy. And assuming it Progressive would have rewritten one in accordance and issued one, assuming it was Progressive, in accordance with Nevada law. But even if they had this family exclusion, it would have been unenforceable because it would have then, at that point, issued to a resident of this state. And that's the critical deciding factor. Now, you not upholding, in addition to the disharmony, not upholding this choice of law provision would encourage, essentially, people to move here, not comply with our laws, other obligations.
But don't they do that anyway, Mr. Prince? Don't people come here from all states and until the cops stop you with your Arizona license plate or your California license plate? Because our costs of registering vehicles here are much higher than probably many states.
You're right. They do that, Your Honor. Yes, they do. But they shouldn't. And just because people do it doesn't mean that that's lawful and in compliance with our laws. And if you want to accept the benefits of our public policy and have your policy of insurance, that you bought, paid for, and negotiated in another state, then you should be complying with our laws. You should accept the burdens and the benefits. And she didn't accept and satisfy any of her obligations, so therefore she shouldn't accept, be able to receive the benefit of having her contract be written to the detriment of Progressive, who thought they were insuring a Mississippi-based risk.
But if somebody else had been hurt besides her children, Progressive would have covered her, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
As long as it wasn't a family member.
That is correct. Yeah, in this particular situation, that is correct. But the difference, there was no insurance on the car. The only reason we're here today is because she remained a listed driver on the policy. The car actually had no insurance. So, for example, if another person was driving the car, there was no insurance applicable, which is another issue that we deal with under Nevada law, that permissive use, permissive drivers are allowed or are considered insured under every owner's policy issued in this state. And therefore, had she complied with Nevada law, we wouldn't even be having this discussion today.
Anything further? Thank you, Mr. Carter, Mr. Prince, for your arguments here today. This matter will stand submitted for opening recess.